station number 10923, reel 17.
Harold Harper, reel 17. You were telling me about the operation of the curfew.
That's right. That was a job which I did not enjoy, because going into the privacy of people's houses late in the evening wasn't my kettle of fish. And if I could avoid it, I did so. But there again, I made quite a few friends. I think they realised that I wasn't being sort of too authoritative, providing they didn't misbehave themselves, everybody was happy.
Were they observing the curfew?
Oh, yes.
What about the black market? Did you or any of the lads from the South Hussars engage?
I think there was more black market in Belgium and Holland than there was in Germany, quite frankly. The Germans, obviously, were disastrously short of soap. Soap was there. And so one could get snaps for soap and things like that. And silk stockings, of course, were always in demand. I think we had a little bit of sport while we were there. We played the Russians at football. We had one disastrous game against the Germans.
Why was it disastrous?
Disastrous in as much as we lost 7-0 and found out afterwards that two of their players had actually played for Germany itself. And what we thought was, we decided that we would try, this was after the fraternisation ban was off, by sort of Octoberish. And we decided to try and get on with the local population, and we organised this football match. And what we didn't realise was this team was playing in the second division of the German league. They'd raked in one or two sort of 40-year-olds who'd have been ex-professionals, and they'd labelled this match as Statlone, which was the small town, versus the British Army. And all it was against our battery. And the only bloke who came out with any sort of credit in our crowd was a poor old goalkeeper who only let 7 in, but nevertheless made about 20 marvellous saves. But that was one match. And by the same rule, we played the Russians, and we could have beaten them 10-0 and sort of let it go at about 3-0, I think it was. So we were kind, but the Germans weren't so kind to us. Can I tell you about a cricket match?
Yes.
We'll fill this tape then, and then this one or two blokes, you see, came to me and they said, "What about a game of cricket?" I said, "Well, good heavens above, I said, they don't play cricket in Germany," and so I thought, everywhere we went there were goalposts, but then no cricket. No, anyway, we found about 5 or 6 miles away, we found this lovely flat meadow, and we acquired, if you like, for want of a better word, a roller off a farm, and we rolled this pitch meticulously for about a fortnight before, and they all wanted to start playing on it, and I said no, no way. Anyway, eventually we decided to have this game, and I sort of said, right, well, I'll bowl the first over, and I'm no bowler, and my friend was batting. I just took two paces, brought my arm over in the direction of the wicket. The ball reared up and hit him on the head, and that was off two paces. So I thought, well, there must have been a freak there, you see. So the next one hit him on the shoulder. So we decided to pack that one up and decided the wicket wasn't quite good enough. But the funny thing about it was all the German village had turned out to see this freak match, and they thought it was rather funny to see the British soldiers knocking hell out of each other. I thought, well, this is this. They thought that was the game, you see. But so we weren't exactly the best test match wicket preparers. But that we never played cricket again after that.
Anything else you remember about the occupation?
I think later that year I became regimental quartermaster sergeant, and I couldn't have thought of a worse time to have the job, quite frankly, because looking after all these camps, I was getting equipment in, food for them, all sorts of Red Cross parcels and goodness knows what for distribution. And at the same time, we were getting chappies being demobbed, handing the kit in. We got quite a few regiments that were being disbanded, and one or two chaps who had left in, who'd still got time to serve, being drafted into the battery and bringing equipment with them. So to keep a balance and idea of the equipment was almost impossible. I wasn't sorry to see the end of that job when I got demobbed, but it was quite an experience, that one.
Was there any problem with was there any pilfering problem from stores? I mean, with the opportunity to get them on the black market, even if it was a bit low.
Yeah, there was the opportunity, but we were pretty strict on that. Yeah.
So it was just a worry rather than something that.
That's right. Yeah.
What about your demob then?
Demob. It was quite honestly a little bit of a what's the word? Oh, blimey, anticlimax. One always thought that this, the day you got demobbed, it was going to be fantastic, and you'd jump for joy. As I left Munster and left all the chaps behind who I'd fought with and been with all for many, many years, there was a touch of sadness, quite frankly. Even if I was going home to a new bride, one felt quite cut off from something that had been part of your life. I got demobbed eventually at York, and that was it.
Did you ever think of staying in the army? I mean,
No, I was never. There were quite a few people applied for jobs in the occupation army. Military government, I think it was called. They got jobs in there, but it never. No, I was the type of soldier, I presume, who went in to do a job, and having done the job, was quite happy to get back to civilian life. I liked the firm I worked for, and I carried on working there.
So you went back to your conveyancing?
Boots accounting department, yeah.
And they took you back away?
Yeah, no problem. There was a type of firm who honoured, their commitments.
How had the war affected you, do you think?
Terrifically. I mean, you went in as a boy, so to speak, and came out as a very much of a man. One's outlook was as different as, physically, I suppose I was probably very worn out. And the reaction set in after I got home. About 6 months afterwards, I had ulcers and goodness knows what. Which rather gave the impression that you know, this there again, it was something of an anticlimax, which had come, you know, you'd tense yourself up during the war, and now you weren't so tense. The thing was sort of backfiring on you, really.
But nothing serious?
Nothing serious. Oh, no. I didn't have a nervous breakdown. I was very, very close to it at one time. I was scared to cross the road, scared to sit on the top of a double-decker bus.
When did that start?
That started about a year after I was demobbed, yeah.
And how did you cope with it?
I had a father who was very blunt, and he told me in no certain manner what to do. I suppose that helped me.
What did he advise you
to do? Well, just sort of, you know, pull yourself together and, you know, that sort of thing. I suppose with the help of my wife as well, when the Territorial Army reformed in 1947, I think it was, or 48, something like that, I had a fair amount of persuasion to join, but I wouldn't.
Why not?
No, I just didn't feel as though I wanted to get involved again, quite frankly.
Do you know why you didn't?
I suppose war weariness.
Do you think your nerve had gone slightly, or what? How do you feel?
Yeah, you may have. You're probably right to a certain extent that the nerve had gone a little bit. Towards the end of the war, I would confess that I was feeling a little bit on the nervous side. I'd had that experience just before we left Sicily, when I suppose war weariness had set in a little bit, and Captain Birkin told me afterwards, he was my troop commander, told me months after the war, he said that you were sent home then because it was considered that you'd had enough. And he said, and we thought you'd be better off on the advance party to give you a break. Which I thought was very kind of them.
This nervousness about crossing roads, how long did it take to fade
away? Oh, about 3 or 4 months, or probably 6 months. Yeah.
Then you were all right then?
Yeah, the wife was, obviously by that time I got a wife, and I suppose marital responsibilities crept in as well, because properties were very difficult to get hold of. You had to live with other people and all that sort of thing.
So it was the stress of civilian life as well?
Yes, and the stress of getting back into civilian life as well, because you realise how much you'd lost, really. When you sort of pitted yourselves against the blokes back at work who hadn't, through some reason or other, hadn't left the company, and they knew everything that was going off and you didn't. You got to pick it all up.
Had it affected your hearing at all, or long term did it?
No.
So you didn't get good ear?
No. I can't, to this very day, I can't understand this, because so many of my colleagues were hearing aids, as you know. One or two of them even were deaf during the war. And I could never understand. I thank my lucky stars something, because I many a time can remember when I had a crack in the ear and I couldn't hear a thing for about half an hour afterwards, but it doesn't seem to have done any permanent damage to the eardrums.
Now, you're still quite associated with the South Knots Hussars.
Oh, yeah.
So you've maintained your links with...
Oh, yeah.
Although you didn't rejoin.
Well, no, I didn't rejoin, but I... very briefly, when the Korean War came along and they started calling up the Z Reserve, I was on Z Reserve, and I was sent with the 69th Medium Regiment, which is a Liverpool regiment, for a fortnight's camp on Salisbury Plains, which I found, in all fairness, found very difficult, because 5 years after the war you'd softened a little bit. This was 1951, And by then, of course, in all fairness, I was what? I would be 33. So, having done that, I thought, well, if there's going to be another war, and let's face it, it was on the cards, wasn't it, in the Korean time, I thought, if there's going to be another war, I'll do it with the South Not Cesar. Not that I'd anything against the Liverpool crowd, but I suddenly had this urge to, having sort of been broken the ice, so to speak, and gone out on manoeuvres again, I thought, well, join the South Knots. So I joined the South Knots in 52 and came out in 55. I just did the minimum 3 years, by which time I was about 36, 37, and I found it was too much, really.
What rank did you rejoin it?
I rejoined it as a sergeant major. They're very kind. They put me in it. Yeah.
Regimental or
no, just battery sergeant major. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after that, I just got involved with the Old Comrades Association. And to this very day, I'm now the chairman. And hopefully sort of still being involved. So that's the end of my little story.
Thank you very much.